Over NBC's coast-to-coast network of independent affiliated stations, the 1,024th consecutive University of Chicago Roundtable. Today, the Roundtable presents the second program in a new series on Problems of Asia. Taking part in a discussion of Korea are the ambassador from Korea to the United States, Dr. John M. Chang, Niles Bond, officer in charge of Korean affairs in the Office of Northeast Asian Affairs, Department of State, and Arthur C. Bunce, just returned this week from Korea, where he was chief of the ECA mission to Korea since its establishment in January 1949. And before that, he was advisor to General Hodge during the period of military occupation. Mr. Bunce first went to Korea in 1928, speaks Korean, and is a distinguished economist. The moderator of today's program is Edward A. Ackerman, Far East geographer of the Department of Geography at the University of Chicago, and past consultant to Allied General Headquarters in Japan. To open today's discussion on Problems of Asia, Korea, we present Mr. Ackerman.
The latest news on Korea, which is still on the news wires, reads, Northern Front, Korea. Communist forces are surging toward the supply base of Daegu and the east coast port of Pohang in heavy new attacks along the entire Northern Front. One drive has carried the Reds to within less than 10 miles of Daegu. Toward the east, they have punched a wide gap through our defenses, recapturing Kigi and cutting the Daegu-Pohang highway 7 miles to the south. For the first time in 2 months, communist planes have taken to the air to blast American positions on the southern front. Mr. Bunce, you were in Korea a few days ago. What do you think about the condition of things there now?
Mr. Ackerman, I'm not a military expert, but the recent news certainly emphasizes General MacArthur's appeal to the United Nations for more troops. It is my hope that that appeal will be met speedily. Apart from the military situation, however, there are other problems which are very serious in the small area we have under our control. For example, the population of that area has almost doubled, with a tremendous influx of refugees. These people are without food, clothing. They have to be taken care of medically and ordered to avoid typhus and typhoid and smallpox spreading very rapidly. The winter is coming on. The housing is going to be a serious problem. I'd like to say this, that arrangements have already been made between the United Nations, ECA, and the War Department to take care of many of these immediate problems. And the whole ECA program has been changed and redirected in order to meet this problem that the civilian population is facing.
Mr. Bond, you are an expert in the recent history of Korea, and you are the State Department official in charge of Korean affairs. On today's roundtable, the listeners and I want to learn all we can about Korea. Did the United States fail in occupation of South Korea? Why did we withdraw our troops? Why did the invasion by the North Korean forces occur? Was Syngman Rhee running a police state? What efforts did we make in the last 4 years to get the Russians to agree to a unified Korea? How much did we do to help the people of Korea toward democracy and land reform? These and other questions are what I would like to get answers to. So let's start at the beginning and get the full story. How did we get into Korea?
Mr. Ackerman, although official relations between the United States and Korea extend back to the 1880s, nearly 30 years before the Japanese annexation of Korea, the current phase of our interest in Korea may be said to date from the Cairo Declaration of December 1943. In that declaration, the United States, Great Britain, and China, in defining their war aims in the Pacific, expressed their collective determination that in due course, Korea shall become free and independent. That pledge was reaffirmed by the same three powers in the Potsdam Declaration of July 1945 and this point should be noted, was subscribed to by the Soviet government in its declaration of war against Japan in the following month. American military forces first landed in Korea on September 8, 1945, some 4 weeks after the capitulation of Japan, for the limited purpose of accepting the surrender of Japanese troops in that part of Korea lying south of the 38th parallel.
On the University of Chicago roundtable discussion of Asia of July 30th recently, Mr. Hoskins told how the decision was made to divide the country at the 38th parallel. Now, North Korea was not given to the Russians at Yalta, but there is still the question in our minds, why did we make it the 38th parallel?
The circumstances surrounding the establishment of this notorious line have somehow become the subject of one of the most prevalent and tenacious of misconceptions. Stated briefly, I would say that this misconception consists of the idea that the United States and the Soviet Union agreed at Yalta to the partition of Korea along the 38th parallel. As you have just said, the fact is that no arrangements relating to the division or joint occupation of Korea were made at Yalta or at any other wartime international conference. The establishment of the 38th parallel line was part of an overall military plan drawn up in Washington during the closing days of the war, the sole purpose of which was to define the areas in which American, Russian, and other Allied forces would accept the surrender of Japanese troops throughout the Japanese-occupied areas of the Far East.
Why didn't we allow the Russians to accept the Japanese surrender in all Korea?
Well, Mr. Ackerman, even though our disenchantment with our Russian allies was at that time still in its very early stages, I imagine that it was felt that the fulfillment of our pledges on behalf of Korean independence would be rendered immeasurably more difficult if Korea were to be occupied in its entirety by Soviet forces. One virtue of the particular line that was chosen was that it placed Seoul, the historic capital of Korea, and the port and communication center of Incheon in the U.S. zone. I would add that from the point of view of the United States, the establishment of such a line in Korea was rendered particularly important by the fact that the nearest available American troops were many hundreds of miles and several weeks away in Okinawa and the Philippines, while Russian forces were poised on the very borders of Korea and did, in fact, enter North Korea while the 38th parallel line was still under discussion. Far from permitting the Soviet Union to take over a part of Korea from which it could have been excluded, the 38th parallel therefore provided a holding line without which the entire Korean peninsula could have been occupied by Soviet forces long before American troops could have been put ashore.
Mr. Bunce, you were advisor to General Hodge and spent many months in Korea. What is your view on these circumstances at the beginning of the trusteeship of Korea?
Following the establishment of the 38th parallel, we very rapidly found out that although it was set up only as a line to demark areas in which surrender would be accepted, that the Russians closed the border completely, that persons, goods, and even money were stopped from flowing over that border. As a result of that, we went to Moscow, and there the Moscow decision was made in which they set up an agreement to establish a joint commission on Korea. When was that, Mr. Bond? Moscow decision.
The Moscow agreement was announced in December of 1945, if you recall.
Following that announcement, we had a conference in Seoul. The Russians came down. The Americans took the position that we wanted to establish free movement of people and goods over the border and establish a uniform currency. None of these programs were accepted by the Russians. As a result, the only thing we got out of that conference was the exchange of mail between North and South Korea. Following this conference, of course, the Joint Commission met in 1946, and I was a member of both sessions of the Joint Commission. The first Joint Commission meeting, the Russians took the position that any party which had opposed the Moscow decision, which included the concept of trusteeship, could not be admitted for consultation in our consultative assembly, which was to be established under this decision.
How did the Communist Party stand on the matter of trusteeship?
Well, at the very beginning, the Communist parties were just as opposed to it as were the non-Communist parties. And there was a very interesting incident. They were having a parade, and the Communists got orders at the last minute that they were to support trusteeship. So half of them had banners opposing trusteeship, and half of them had banners supporting it. But all the non-communist parties were overwhelming in opposing trusteeship. Americans took the position that if these people were to have something to say about their government, if they wanted to oppose trusteeship, they should be given the opportunity to do so. The first joint commission was completely futile. Russia said anybody that opposed this trusteeship concept could not be invited for consultation, which eliminated everything except the Communist parties. Now, following this breakdown in the joint commission, the Secretary of State and the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Soviet government exchanged letters, and a new basis admitting freedom of speech was established. But in the second session of the Joint Commission, when the Soviet command found that the non-communist parties would sign a pledge stating that they would cooperate with the Joint Commission, the Soviet delegates immediately took the position that they would not admit them because they had to be jointly approved by the American and Russian members. In other words, they established a unilateral veto of any of the parties or social organizations that wanted to join in this consultative assembly. We had taken the position that the parties and social organizations from North Korea would be accepted, and those communist parties in South Korea, which would have given them, as a matter of fact, about 40% of the seats in that consultative assembly. The Russians would not accept it. The only thing they would accept was over 51%. The whole thing broke up again.
So the only thing that we got from all the conferences with the Russians, Mr. Bunce, was an exchange of mail, which was an agreement made at the very beginning.
That's right.
This brings us to the North Korean invasion of last June 25th. For an analysis of the issues of this conflict, the University of Chicago Roundtable is fortunate in being able to present now a distinguished official of the South Korean government, Dr. John M. Chan, Ambassador from Korea to the United States. To present Ambassador Chang, we now take you to New York.
It is a great honor for me to take part in the University of Chicago Roundtable discussion on Korea. I shall not attempt to give any background facts on Korea because I'm sure all of you are already quite familiar with it. In discussing the conflict currently raging in Korea, I might explain what happened in my country and why it happened. As for what happened, the answer is not far to see. The men in the Kremlin decided to test the strength of the free world. What is happening in Korea is not a civil war. It is a communist aggression. I shall tell you why. North Korea is, and since August 1945, has been a captive area. From 1945 to the present time, it has not been so much a satellite as a puppet state. What it does is what Moscow tells to do. To misunderstand that fact or to fail to grasp its meaning is to misunderstand the situation we confront. When the Soviet Union moves into Korea, in 1945, she did so with her plan carefully laid. Communist expatriate Koreans were brought back, and with them as a nucleus, a communist police state was set up in Korea. Over 2 million loyal and patriotic Koreans in North Korea refused to knuckle down to this totalitarian regime, and they fled secretly across the border. Upon those who remained, the police state was ruthlessly imposed. They were forced into the lockstep of totalitarianism. It goes without saying that the army of North Korea was equipped with tanks, planes, and artillery supplied by Russia. And this is the regime, and this is the army, that at dawn on a peaceful Sunday struck without warning upon the Republic of Korea. That day will be well marked by historians. It was that day that resolved the doubts that beset the free world and resolved the issues of our time. It clarified the minds of men as nothing has done since the defeat of Axis powers.